Numenor was mostly ruled by kings, but there were three ruling queens, and some more nearly ruling queens. History doesn't remember them well, but let's judge for ourselves. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we dive deep into The Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's wider legendarium, as well as A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. Let's start by saying that evil is almost certainly an overstatement here. You can make up your own mind, but although none of the three reigns we will look at are exactly overflowing with goodness and glory, they don't represent the nadir of Numenor either. And in case it needs to be said, I don't think Tolkien was making a gender political point here either. The greatest villains in Numenor's fall were overwhelmingly male. Numenor's first three kings passed their ruling scepter on to their eldest son, who also happened to be their oldest child, and as those reigns and that of Tar-Elendil, the fourth king, between them amounted to over 700 years, the Numenorians, particularly the descendants of Elros, were all long, the idea of a ruling queen was not really an issue in the early days of Numenor. The technical rule was that of agnatic primogeniture, though there was no official law, which had its first challenge in the year 740 of the Second Age, when Tar-Elendil passed his scepter onto his son, who became known as Tar-Meneldur, rather than his daughter and oldest child, Silmarillion. Reading between the lines, the royal family knew this was a significant moment, choosing a younger son over an eldest daughter. Yes, the royal scepter was passed down to the new king, but the ancient Ring of Barahir, which had been in the family for centuries and symbolised the family's bond with the elves, was passed on to Silmarillion, as well as a valuable mithril fillet and a new title for her son as Lord of Andúnye. It is from that line we get Elendil, Isildur, and ultimately Aragorn. That's why Aragorn has the Ring of Barahir, for example, a strong line of true monarchs, but that line did not rule Numenor. In any event, the first ruling queen of Numenor was Tar-An-Kelame. There is a whole story here, and Tolkien wrote it all up as The Mariner's Wife, the only complete or near-complete tale from Numenor. Please do check out Unfinished Tales for that. She was the only child of Tar-Aldarion and Erendis, who was the eponymous Mariner's Wife. At the risk of summarising Tolkien to an egregious level, Aldarion loved sailing and was critical in re-cementing the relationship with elves like Gil-galad, but at the cost of his own relationships at home. So An-Kelame was his only child with Erendis, and he changed the laws of succession to allow her to become queen, which she did in the year 1075 of the Second Age, the first ruling queen of Numenor. On acceding to the throne, or more accurately, when her father died. In those days, a king passed the scepter on when he felt old age creeping in, often years before he died, so the land could always be ruled by a king or queen in the abundance of their youth. She abandoned her father's policies. She turned her back on what was happening in Middle-earth and instead focused on Numenor. Fair enough, you may say, but the timing here is notable and significant, because this was around when Sauron started to re-emerge in Middle-earth, a bit over halfway into her reign around the year 1200, as Annatar. We know that Sauron around then was concerned by the growing power of Numenor, so her turning her back on Middle-earth will surely have emboldened him to push forward with his plans. Anyway, she passed on the scepter to her son Tar-Anarion when Annatar was in Eregion, teaching the elves how to make rings of power. The Numenorians stayed well out of that particular drama until much later. Probably by many standards, Numenor flourished during An-Kelame's reign, so her crimes, such as they were probably more to do with foreign policy than domestic policy, and omission rather than outright evil deeds. The law of succession then was more equal than it was, but not totally equal. The oldest child, male or female, was next in line, but whereas a son would become king automatically and have to abdicate if they didn't want the throne, daughters were seemingly free to simply take themselves out of the line of succession, as An-Kelame's two granddaughters did. Otherwise, we would have had even more ruling queens in relatively short order. As it happens, the second ruling queen of Numenor was just a couple of generations later, Tar-Telperion. Now, we know less about her, but at the start of her reign, Sauron was still in Eregion, disguised as Annatar. He really was there for a very long time, before sneaking back to Mordor to forge the One Ring. After that, and the elves uncovered the plot, he invaded Eregion, seized those 16 other rings of power and pushed on westwards, basically invading all of Middle-earth, except for the stronghold of Lindon, where Gil-galad was, and a few enclaves here and there like Rivendell. What was Tar-Telperion doing during that time? Well, not a lot to start with. But when things started to look bleak, Gil-galad formally requested aid from Numenor, and Numenor responded. Minas Tir, Tar-Telperion's heir, sent a large fleet to the aid of the elves, and their intervention tipped the balance against Sauron's forces, pushing them all the way back to Mordor. As I said, Numenor was mighty in those days. You may have noticed, though, that I said Minas Tir, Telperion's heir, sent the fleet, rather than her. To be honest, it's hard to know how much significance to place on this fact. Did she refuse to engage, forcing her heir, who would turn out to be a good king later, to take action without her? Or was it simply that she had delegated those parts of her duties to her heir, as was not uncommon? Things are further clouded by Tolkien referring to him as Tar-Minas Tir in this context, a title he wouldn't have until he was king, and some confusion about the exact date of his succession that even Christopher Tolkien could not fully explain. In any event, Tar-Telperion had a long reign, and one that we know little of, or her personal beliefs and actions, given that she seems not to have involved herself in the overwhelming geopolitical crisis of the time. We do know that she refused to wed, so left no children to succeed her, and also that she refused to pass on her scepter to her heir until just before she died, which Tolkien almost certainly will have meant us to see as a rather concerning desire to cling on to power beyond when wisdom would suggest she pass it on. So Tar-Telperion, again, probably can't be described as evil, but Tolkien certainly gave us a few indicators that she wasn't exactly good and wise. After Tar-Telperion, it was a good few hundred years before the third and last ruling queen of Numenor, Tar-Vanimelde. And unlike the equivocation we gave to her two predecessors, she was very clearly not a strong ruling queen. Tolkien gives us this summary of her 111-year reign. She gave little heed to ruling, loving rather music and dance, and the power was wielded by her husband, Herukalmo, younger than she, but a descendant by the same degree from Tar-Atanamir. So she ruled in name only, ceding all effective power to her husband, who, naming himself Tar-Andukal, seized the sceptre upon his wife's death, refusing to pass it on to their son until his own death a couple of decades later. So again, a ruling queen holding on to the sceptre for longer than they probably should, but this time because it seemingly meant little to her. She didn't care about ruling or power. A weak queen, undoubtedly, but again, probably not an evil one. Before trying to draw some conclusion about all this, we should just note another queen who never was, Miriel. She was the daughter and only child of Tar-Palantir, the penultimate king of Numenor. She should have inherited after her father's death, but her cousin Pharazôn, who we know as Ar-Pharazôn, forced her to marry him and took the scepter from her. He was the ruling king who brought Sauron to Numenor, listened to his counsel, tried to invade Valinor, and brought about the doom of Numenor, a terrible legacy. So, although we started this video thinking about the evil queens of Numenor, that actually isn't their legacy. Perhaps Silmarillion and Miriel would have even been good rulers, we'll never know. But the three we did have were not good, but also not the biggest villains of Numenor's history. And Calamet may have turned her back on her father's pro-Middle-earth policies, but anyone who has read The Mariner's Wife will know quite how bad her upbringing was, and probably find it, if not good, then certainly understandable. And even if she didn't note Sauron's early moves as Annatar, then most others didn't either. And Numenor does seem to have broadly prospered under her rule. Not a good reign, but far from a terrible one. Tar-Telperion is more of a mystery, because we don't know for sure what her approach was to countering Sauron. Yes, Minas Tir ordered the Numenorean fleet to get involved rather than her, but surely she could have overruled him if she wished, and she didn't. There are some red flags associated with her reign, like holding on to power for so long, but not enough evidence to conclude that she definitely was a bad ruler in any significant way, certainly not compared to some other rulers around at the time. And as for Tar-Vanimelde, well, no, she wasn't very good. Not through any evil intent, as far as we can tell, just a lack of interest in ruling. So although none of the three ruling queens of Numenor exactly covered themselves in glory, they also weren't the true villains of Numenor's downfall. There were plenty of ruling kings who really were very bad, seizing power when they shouldn't, actively turning their backs on all that was good in Middle-earth, oppressing the faithful, following the counsel of, well, Sauron, and leading to the destruction of the entire island continent and its people. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support the channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.